I need to get back in the habit of using this, and it's near the beginning of the month. So, here is an overview of all the major events that happened in Nomadverse. Jacob attempts suicide and stops. This is his awakening. Jacob has a couple phases that he goes through. There is his birth as a nomad, where he wanders around the city and slowly loses parts of his human self and becomes a nomad. And this is kind of the first. It's a handy bucket. This is like one of his first awakenings. And it's also like one of the first tones of Nomadverse. The Nomadverse has several different... oh, it's a bucket that used to be used for pool shock. The Nomadverse... has several different vibes, kind of how like the beginning of the Matrix feels different than later on, and I'm kind of imagining that they might kind of make sense to break up the Nomadverse into generally three arcs. The first arc is the Awakening arc, which for about most of the runtime could be about drug addicts and psychonauts and people with mental illness, until it is revealed that yes, in fact, they were gaining superpowers, and the serendipities were true, and as they start to become powerful, this creates the second age. Where this generation of nomads realize that they're actually part of a larger world, that they thought that they were, some of them thought that they were like, oh, we're this generation, we're rising up, and we're becoming, something great, and when they end up becoming that thing, when they metamorphosize themselves into nomads, realize that they're just adults now. They just know. They've lost their innocence. And, I think that any unity that they build gets shattered by this, as they don't know how to live to eat. Now that they've lost their innocence, they don't know how to live together again. So, Jacob's first arc, he's kind of a loner. He doesn't really hang out with people at all. He does start, socializing in, the third part, which the third part ends with his, ascension to Demiurge. The first part ends with him finding out he is the Demiurge, and then kind of what draws him to people is him trying to be like, deny it. He's like, no, I'm not. I think there might be a part of nomads that it's very hard for them to change who they were when they became what they are. Personality-wise, aspirationally. That's why they must wander. I don't know about that. Because part of their nature is that they dwell in every moment of the people around them. So they experience like tens of thousands of years every second. When they're like dense. So, during the middle arc, they're all too weak, and it's basically just them coming into maturity and becoming who they are in the truest way. And this ends with the setup for the final installment in the middle arc, which is the apotheosis of Jacob. And at this point, I think that they went in the end of the second arc, they went down into the underground and into the abyss even, and that's when the great calamity happens, where the Hanging Gardens of Babylon fall, and where Jacob stabs Horus, where was I? Okay, we're back. And after the calamity, and after the resulting expedition into the abyss, Jacob loses his eyes, or his eyes are damaged. This is reflective imagery of the completion of the world becoming a cloud to him. But the way it is depicted is there is a cloth around his eyes, as if white cloud. He dwells as a blind, I think, in his human-looking form at this point. He just kind of looks like he has cataracts. And he can still get around the city, because at this point he's strong enough that he can just see, so long as there is another person around who perceives the environment that he is in. But he's completely neutered. Like, this is his Griffith getting the shit kicked out of him arc, and he's kind of like cosmically humbled, and then there's a new tower being built, and it is going to be the tallest, and it is yet unfinished, and he looks up at it and he just stares at it for days, and Horus says to him, she doesn't at this phase, they can just think of each other, or thinking a thought as if to that person. Your consciousness comes in a film adaptation. It would be just like fucking Sense8. Less, not giving you their powers, but where it would just, it's a person who can just appear and they're kind of there in an actual sense. So that's different than Sense8. In that what they're doing is they're manifesting a density in the mycelial web, which is the collective unconsciousness. And so Jacob goes and lives with regular humans for billions of years. Increases in wisdom. I don't know how, but eventually Jacob figures it out that the way into the abyss was not through way of going down, but was going up through a hyperlinearity, or sorry, a hyper liminarity, through the hyperliminal. Or something. Anyway, and so he climbs to the top of the tower, and he somehow up there, separated from everyone, too far away. He's at the very reach. He's pulling the psychic web up with him. This physical act is a manifestation of, or it's the symbol he bore the weight, and he walked up he took the stairs. I need to climb up a very, very tall tower to know what it's like by taking the stairs. Perhaps as he goes up, they come to him in presence, and they beg him to stop. They don't know what he's doing, but he's been he expressed he desires revenge or justice or his will or something. And he climbs to the top, and perhaps there is some archons up there who have actually kind of had tech here that he stole, or that he's co-opting or something. But I think he ascends, and then there's the main squad are all there at the top of this tower. They chased after him. What a curious thought that transparency could be connected to movement, as seen in active camo, such as in Metal Gear Solid 4, at least. I haven't played 5. So anyways, I think the main squad basically are up there, and then someone tells them they need to jump. They need to find the hyperliminal. And they all plummet to their deaths. There's like a bomb that's gonna go off or something. And they pass through the ground and fall into the abyss. And in doing so, they had to go to the high place to get to the abyss. The sewer route is going. You're gonna try and start cutting through the mycology of the fucking collective unconscious. It's like a spider's den mixed with bramble bush kind of scenario going on. Lots of cocoons. It's like this region is the boundary region between the urban. It's kind of like the auxiliary hardware necessary for the urban to function, and it is what contains the like psychic form of every archon, nomad, power, authority, etc., as well as communicating infrastructure, which corresponds with the metacontexties, and then like sub, like demi contexts. There they're kind of like animals. They're like a smart crow that's been trained to do a task. It's a lot of what the system runs on are these kind of automated systems. So, Act 3 is basically going to be, they end up going down to the Abyss, but the Abyss is different now, because the Demiurge took Rain, the sea bottom, which is the event horizon, has been, has gone down. Reality has been established. So now you're able to cross, at this, juncture. And so everything in the psychic is metaphor. The logic, if you pull at the strings of the logic of the things that happen in part three, which is stuff that happens in the psychic, you're going to have a bit of a hard time. Now, there's also a side story, which it follows just a team of archons being badass militech-esque dudes. There's another story, which is the story of Kryon, the ferryman. And his deal and his apprentice. Right, so part three is mostly like, they're standing on top of the meta complex and the meta context. The sea recedes, and as it does, it makes this sound, and it recedes into this perfect coral that's kind of like a geometric, just orthogonally, so X, Y, and Z, no diagonal lines, but long downward planes. It's basically, imagine if you wrote out binary by either having a laser cutter cut out a square or leave a space that a square would take out, but the size of the squares are diverse. There's seemingly a more complicated code than binary, and then you take these plates and then you fold them at right angles to kind of roll them up. So take the this is rolling up the long way, as opposed, yeah. So if it was in portrait, you'd be rolling from left to right, or right to left, not up to down. Yeah. But you're instead of rolling it, it's kind of like etch-a-sketch snail, not but like only at right angles though.
not lazy etch-a-sketch, right-angle mastery etch-a-sketch, and, like, pixelated. Yeah. Anyway. And then Methuselah's there. And Methuselah and Bartholomew's there. And I think, Kim is there, and this is when Bartholomew and Kim get reunited after two books, and maybe they get to take the lead for this part. That would be really fun. Yeah. Anyway, and then there are also those nomads who are back in the city. And what became of Babylon, or the Hanging Gardens, maybe they can find, like, entrances into things where there's writing, and they could try and decode it, and maybe they could wander over to another city eventually. I think that that's what the shades that are there are gonna do, is they're gonna be like, oh, okay, sweet. Oh, maybe they don't mind. Maybe, you know, here's an interesting thing. Psychic beings who use the abyss to get around don't mind the weight, because when they're in the abyss, they're only waiting like 500 years, you know, or something. In the abyss, the essence of life that pours down the rocks, the miso soup, when it laps the water, the high concentration of reality cause daemons to be able to rapidly crystallize. Like flash crystals, or like lightning, but then they use up the energy quickly and then get stiff again, or it's kind of allows they it's akin to a fish jumping out of water, like a salmon jumping to get a bug off its side on a lake. Just like zoop, and it creates beautiful little waterfalls of bismuthy demons. And if they should be so lucky as to land on to crystallize and then land on something solid instead of falling right back in the muck and being consumed by their brethren, then, oh, daemons are essential. They are made of whatever muck they they came from. If they lose any part of themselves, they are different. Perhaps a daemon's true name shortens. Like by a letter, but it's the demonic. Letter system. Or a character. Maybe it's like a word. Their names are like word ciphers. Definitely, but more obscure than kill 6 billion demons because they can't rep them completely. But it's more their hash key. It's like literally, what are they? And so, if they lose a part of themselves, I think they're pretty immutable. But if they lose a part of themselves. Or if they give up a part of themselves, it's gone. If I lost my arm, it would be very hard, but I would still be Jonathan Davies. I wouldn't be Mukushneshek. If I lost my arm. If I lost any part. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and so very often in coming to shore, multiple daemons are born as the idea gets refined. And they cut into the soapstone made of the fat of the decaying gods, long sunk to the bottom, but they froth this white ichor, the only thing solid to... pure reality, it's pure material. It is the purest thing anything could be made out of. It is porcelain. It is fine china. And the void spits it out because. No, that's not it. Oh, maybe. What if... any matter? I don't know. I need to keep thinking about it. It's essentially the gods are too rich with energy, akin to how fatty foods don't spoil, or how high sugar foods don't spoil, that they can't actually be they have to die by infinite delusion, by becoming an idea of 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 an idea. Just how Horace doesn't really have that much tie to her nature.